in the heart of New York City, near Washington Square. In 1911, March winds were cold and bare. A fire broke out in a building 10 stories high, and 146 young girls in those flames did die.
This is a Building Bridges, your community and labor report production by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Out of the flames, the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire and its legacy. The fire next time. Echo. March 1911. March 2011 marks the 100th anniversary of one of the most important events in the history of the U.S. labor movement, the Triangle Fire. Fire broke out on the top three stories of a relatively new building, which housed the Triangle Shirtwaist Company, a large manufacturer of women's clothes, a building which today houses New York University classrooms. Though the building was modern and advertised as fireproof, the cramped layout of the factory space, large piles of flammable materials, locked doors, inadequate fire escape, and the inability of New York City fire truck ladders to reach high enough to rescue the people trapped by the flames led to a staggering loss of life. All told, 146 workers died March 1911. Mostly young women workers, many still in their teens, some as young as 14, killed by the fire or their desperate leaps to the ground to escape the heat and flames. It was the largest industrial tragedy in the history of New York City. After the fire, the ashes, New York State passed a whole series of new laws regulating factory safety, which, along with unionization, gradually eliminated some of the worst conditions workers faced. Prohibitions on child labor and wage and hour regulations. If Triangle is an old story, one about a century ago, it is also a very current story. There are millions of workers today who face conditions not unlike those faced by the Triangle workers. What people sometimes refer to as the global sweatshop is a vast archipelago of workplaces in many of which young female workers toil long hours in dangerous conditions, very often without any form of representation or rights. The problem of how to regulate the workplace and create a safe, decent life for working people is with us today, just as it was at the time of the Triangle Fire.
The sweatshop was a stuffy room with but a single door. The windows there were gray with dust from off the dirty floor. There were no comforts, no fresh air, no light to sew thereby. And the girls, they toiled from early morn till darkness filled the sky.
Oh, the hands, hands, hands that work to build the land, hands, your land, the labor of the woman and the man, working with their hands.
From bareness to fullness, flowers do bloom. Whenever, however, spring enters a room, oh, whenever, however, spring enters a room. March 25th, 1911. At the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, a fire claimed the lives of 146 people, mostly women, mostly children, in the plume of their lives, in the room of their lives, begging for spring, toiling and begging for spring. And in my head, as I read the history, afraid to touch the pictures, I imagined the room. I imagined the women, dressed in pale blues and pinks, some without heads or arms, sitting, some without legs or waists, hovering, hundreds of flowering girls, tucking spring into sleeves, tucking and tugging at spring to stay alive. And so, a shirtwaist for spring, a dress with a mannish collar, blousing over breasts, blousing over sweat, tapering to fit a female waist, tapering to fit a female breath, sheer silk, cotton, linen, hand-done pleats, hands done in by pleats, hands done in by darts and lace, colors of spring, pale blues, pale pinks, yellows, magentas, lavender, peach, secret thoughts of spring, falling in love under a full moon, forever young, with money enough to buy a flower or two, time enough to smell it. Yes, from bareness to fullness, a flower will bloom, anytime, every time spring enters a room. And here, near these machines, hundreds of flowering girls. Shirtwaist Factory Room, 1911. Crowded, hard, fast, too fast. Closed windows, locked doors, smell of sweat, of wishes being cut to bits, needle stabs, electric shocks, miscarriages over silk, fading paisley, fading magenta. Falling in love will get you fired. Forever old, never fast enough. Buying flowers is wasteful. So hurry, hurry, grind your teeth and soul. $6 a week sent to grandfather. $4 a week sent to Aunt Ruth. Sleep over the machine and you're done for. Way before you open your eyes, ma'am, madam, miss, Mrs. Mother, girlie. Hundreds of flowering green spring girls in rows, waiting with needles in hands for spring to show. Women workers from Ireland, Poland, Germany, France, England, Grenada, Mississippi, thin clothes, thinner hopes, months full of why, of how, of when, answers always less than their pay, but the sewing machines grew like weeds, thick snake roots, strangling the flowers every day, strangling the roses, daisies, lilies every day, hundreds of blooming girls, hundreds of blooming spring girls. The Shirtwaist Building, 1911, 135 feet high, wooden, coal, three floors, not enough stairs, one fire escape, ending in mid-air, ending in the spring mid-air, a tender room of hundreds of blooming bright girls, hundreds of daisy-bud girls, who pray for spring to enter their world, who pray and sweat for spring to enter their world. The strike the year before. And they shouted, open the doors, unwire the windows, more air, more stairs, more quiet time, more fire escapes, and to the ground, damn you, and more toilets, more time to be sick, more time to be well, and remove the fear, and slow it down, for God's sake, slow it all down. It's spring, they shouted. Hundreds of flowering girls, hundreds of flowering girls shouted, for spring to hurry, hurry, and enter their world. And Triangle won a half day, but the doors remained locked, windows remained wired, no extra air, no extra quiet time or sick time. The fear stayed, nothing slowed, and God watched. Hundreds of flowering girls twirl, hundreds of flowering girls willow and twirl.
Oh, the hands, hands, hands that work to build the land. Your land, the labor of the woman and the man, working with their hands.
Father had to take me to the shop and not be late for his own work. I was eager to begin life on my own responsibility, but was also afraid. Don't look so frightened, he said.
Sometimes you work at a big machine, and it's not working right. One of the needles skips. and you get blamed for mistakes. The same machines. The same surroundings. Shirt waists. Shirt waists. And more shirt waists. Rubber heels had just come into use, and you rarely heard the foreman sneak up behind you, watching.
He wouldn't let you stop, not for a drink, the bathroom, nothing. Sometimes, in my haste, I'd get my finger caught and the needle goes right through. I bind the finger up with a piece of cotton and go on working.
They were so beautiful, those hats. They were so rich. A woman looked so dressed, you know, in the back with the bustle. I wanted to grow up to wear earrings and hats and high heels.
I liked music. I liked lectures. I wanted to learn things. I wanted to learn everything. The only thing is the time. I needed time.
Some of them didn't even know how to say a word of English. And they were like cutting threads. And you remember they used to use those nice doilies and things, you call it embroidery. And that time there was no electric iron. They had a pressing with the iron on the stove, on the coal stove or whatever. And they had small children. Those small children were helping the mother cut the threads. Otherwise they wouldn't have much to eat. And those children did help, did fall asleep on the table, didn't have their right rest. Because really that work was paid so cheap. But I was lucky with my embroidery at home. I made enough to put food on the table. The main thing is that I took my father out of the coal mines. He was able to find a job with the trolley car company. But he worked only his 8 hours. I worked from 8 in the morning until sometime 11 at night by gaslight.
I wasn't young. I was an old woman at 15, 16. The only doll I ever wanted. Never got. They were giving out Hanukkah dolls, the Jewish organization. And, I saw the most gorgeous dolls there, and sitting in the chairs. And when it came my turn to get a doll, they looked at me and said, oh, that, I guess she looks too old. So I got a pair of stockings, a box of candy, and an orange and something else. You know, I didn't touch that stuff. And I cried, never had a doll, but I saw to it that the other kids had dolls.
Childhood life wasn't very good. You have to go to work.
He worked 7 days a week. If he didn't come in on Sunday, you were fired on Monday. If you were caught talking to the girls next to you, you were fired. The attitude of the employers was that you are no human being. You just have two hands, and two hands weren't... to them weren't worth more than what they paid. It was a damnable place to work, but there was no alternative. The others were just as bad.
What can I tell you how it is? It's hard labor. We work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
I used to go in the ladies' room, and a few used to follow me, and I was talking to them union.
I knew our girls were dissatisfied. I knew other shops were already on strike. I knew it only needed someone to talk to the girls a little, and they would join the strikers.
I want to say a few words. I have no more patience for talk. I move that we go on a general strike.
We all sat at the machines with our hats and coats beside us, ready to leave.
And there was whispering and talking softly all around the room among the machines. Shall we wait like this? Who will get up first? I started to get up. And at just the same minute, we all got up together in 1 second. We all stood up and all walked out together.
They put down their scissors and walked away from the only thing standing between them and starvation, and between their families and starvation.
10,000, 20,000. This is more than any one of us dared to dream of or hope for. This is not a strike. This is an uprising.
We, yes, we are rising up, rising from the depth of our despair.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west. We're from the mountains, the valleys, the cities, and the farms. We are housewives, nine-to-fives, mothers, and slaves.
Rising up,
we are rising,
rising up.
We are rising,
rising up.
Women 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 are rising,
rising up.
The police are watching. Ribs were being broken, heads were being cracked. When one girl was dragged into court with her head in bloody bandages and the policeman said she had attacked him, the magistrate believed it and said, "You are in strike against God and nature."
The strike the year before. And they shouted, "Open the doors, unwire the windows, more air, more stairs, more quiet time, more fire escapes, and to the ground, damn you, and more toilets, more time to be sick, more time to be well, and remove the fear, and slow it down, for God's sake, slow it all down. It's spring," they shouted. Hundreds of flowering girls shouted for spring to hurry, hurry, and enter their whirl. And Triangle won a half day, but the doors remained locked, windows remained wired.
I've been thinking about how to talk about dreams. I've been thinking about how to talk about dreams. I've been wondering if I could sing about dreams. Trying to find a way to talk about dreams. Greed-driven men created slavery. Black men, women, and children became somebody's property. Greed is a strand in the American dream. Having more than you need is a essential theme. I've been trying to think about how to talk about dreams. I'm trying to find a way to talk about dreams. Trying to find a way to talk about dreams.
Trying to find a way to talk about dreams. Trying to find a way to talk about dreams.
March 25th, 1911, at Triangle. A worker is expendable. A sewing needle is not. A worker is bendable. a sewing needle is not. A worker can be sent straight to hell. A sewing needle is heaven sent and must be protected well. A sewing needle is the finger of God and must be protected well. Over hundreds of flowering girls, hundreds of flowering sweet dandelion girls. March 25th, smoke. Smoke, stopping the machines. Run to wired windows. Run to locked doors. Run to the one and only fire escape. Everyone, run to the air. Hundreds of flowering girls. Smoke, stopping eyes, stopping hearts, stopping worlds. Elevator, move faster. Elevator, you are a machine managed by a human being. Move faster. Come on, faster. Carry all the flowering girls. Carry all the sweet, sweet orchid girls. Fire, catching bouquets of girls in a corner. Tall, long-stemmed lilies on fire in a corner. From bloom to ashes in a corner. Smell them in the rain. Hundreds of tulip girls. On a window ledge, pliés for life. On a window ledge, lovely ribboned young ladies on their tiptoes, twirling, twirling, an arabesque for life. Hundreds of flowering girls, smell them in the rain. Hundreds of jasmine girls. The ladders were too short. The hoses were too short. The men holding the nets were not gods, only men who never caught or trained to catch falling bodies or falling stars or hundreds of flowering girls, hundreds of carnation bud girls. And the girls were not angels, but girls jumping, not goddesses flying or hovering. They smashed. They broke into large pieces. Smell them in the rain. And the sidewalks opened in shame to meet the flowering girls. The sidewalks opened in such horrible shame to cradle the remains of violets. And the gutters bled for hours, choking on bones, shoes, buttons, ribbons, holy sewing needles. The gutters bled for hours, all the colors of spring, the cool magenta of delicate spring. And the fire ate the locked doors and the wired windows, ate the fast machines in their narrow rooms, ate the lace and hand-done pleats, the silk, the cotton, the linen, the crisp sick dollars a week, the eternal buzz of someone else's dreams, nightmares and screams of quiet girls, loud skull-cracking noises from shy girls. Smell them in the rain, the lilacs, daffodils in the rain.
I turned to one of the girls who was putting on her hat and said, "Where does that smoke come from?"
Before I could move, everybody in the shop started to scream and holler. The first time the elevator came up, the girls rushed in, and it was crowded in a half second. The elevator driver struggled with the door and finally closed it. I was left with those who didn't make the first trip.
I jumped over two lines of machines away from the flames. I looked and I saw an old Italian woman. She couldn't jump over the machines.
The elevator came up, and I was swept into the car by the crowd behind me. The last thing I remember seeing was my sister Marie, enveloped in flame.
I saw Bernstein trying to open the door. He couldn't open it. And then I saw Margaret bending down on her knees. The trail of her dress and the ends of her hair began to burn. And then came a big smoke and I couldn't see. I just knew it was Margaret.
People were screaming about their children and anything else. Smoke was coming up all around us. I couldn't see anything else. felt a draft. I wanted to make my way over to where it came from. I wanted to open the window.
To the triangle, and I worked there a short while. Then, one day that I'll never forget as long as I live, fire broke out. The windows and doors were closed. There was no other way to get out.
The doors were locked because the employers thought that you would steal some material or lace. You were watched very strictly.
Saturday was payday. Then it started the whole business. We heard this screaming, yelling, fire, fire. So I was supposed to be the brain. You know, my sister, my friend, Eva, let's run. So she says, no. I says, you come with me. So I took her by the hand and we ran. When the fire started, some girls wanted to jump out of the windows and they were hollering for help. They're scared that they jumped out. I didn't hear them scream anymore.
The little girl with her sweetheart, hand in hand, embraced each other. They were on the ground, going dead.
Marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing their ancient call for.
You've been listening to part one of Out of the Flames and Ashes, The Triangle Shirtwaist Fire and Its Legacy, a radio documentary produced by Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Reports, Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Special thanks to the Actors Company Theaters, Nora Chester and Victoria Mack. Music provided by Bev Grant, Pat Humphreys, and Sweet Honey in the Rock. Poetry by Sophia Henderson Holmes. And thanks to the Murphy Institute for Workers' Education and Labor Studies for introductory script assistance. Tune in next week for part two, when garment workers and their allies, outraged by the deaths of the workers in the Triangle Fire, organized to strengthen unions and create legislation to curtail the worst abuses of sweatshops, from health and safety abuses to wage and hour violations, and examine the legacy of Triangle for today's sweated labor.
For the rising of the women means the rising of us all. No more the drudge and idler, tend and toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses.